This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Feminism in your ears. It's another broad podcast on Joy 94.9. Keep listening. Hashtag feminism. Hashtag podcast. Hashtag broad on Joy 94.9.
And now the Honourable Fiona Richardson, Minister for Women and the Prevention of Family Violence in Victoria. At the National Forum on the Economic Empowerment of Women and Girls, September 5th, 2016. This is Broad.
It's my pleasure now to introduce the Honourable Fiona Richardson, the Minister for Women and Prevention of Family Violence. Fiona is passionate about empowering and improving the lives of women, having helped to deliver Labor's commitment to establish Australia's first Royal Commission into Family Violence. Fiona is now spearheading the development of the Victorian Gender Equality Strategy. And it's our pleasure, as we assemble here, to have the opportunity for our voices to actually be heard through that process. Because as I've mentioned in my opening remarks, we'll deliver a report to the Minister's Office that will share the findings of our forum. Can I ask you please to join me in welcoming Fiona?
Turnout for what is a very important event. On the way in, in fact, I was told a story of a speech I gave at Northcote High School, and apparently I got every year 12 vote that year in the state election because I kept my speech incredibly short. I'm hoping that I can achieve something close to that today, perhaps not. But before I begin, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we stand and pay my respects to elders past and present. I'd also like to acknowledge Heather Nankara from Anrose, Mary Crooks, Warren Mundane, and Amy Mullins, the Executive Director of Women's Leadership Institute, and all the very many women activists and advocates who are here today working in the interests of gender equality. Now, I'm very pleased to be here at the National Forum on Economic Empowerment for Women and Girls. It is, of course, a topic that is very close to my heart and at the very core of my two roles as Minister for Women and Minister for the Prevention of Family Violence. Because I don't think you can have a discussion about empowerment of girls and women that is decoupled from a discussion about the prevention of gendered violence. Because violence towards women comes from the very same place that disempowerment comes from: gender inequality and disrespect. Now, unless you've been living under a rock, you would have noticed that gender equality is a really big thing right now. Barely a day seems to go by without some sort of news report being dominated about another appalling story of gender discrimination. And here's just a few recent examples. There were around 2,000 sexually explicit and naked images of Australian schoolgirls uploaded onto an online chat forum without their consent for rating by men. A group of powerful and prominent men in Australian sports media casually joked on national radio about violently ending the life of a female sports reporter, which prompted this remark from a Commonwealth minister. If we're going to take offence at every silly offhand remark or attempted humour, then we're not focusing on the really important issues of the day. Well, I'm sorry, Julie Bishop. But this issue, with respect to attitudes towards women and girls, is the important issue of the day. Then there was the rampant sexism of so much of the media coverage of the feats of the female Olympians. And today, you can see surprise in the media about the incredible success of the elite football league that was on Saturday night, which I had the pleasure of attending. Then there's reports of the men's Facebook page, which is promoting a rape culture and violence towards women. And don't even start me on the kinds of ways that Hillary Clinton is talked about and described as the potential future president of the United States. And I'm sure no matter what side of the political divide you sit on, I'm sure you would all agree that at the gendered abuse that Hillary Clinton is constantly subjected to, much like the experience of Julia Gillard, is simply appalling. And should she make history and become the first female president of the United States, I have no doubt she will be standing on the shoulders of millions of women around the world who support her and give her strength. The sad truth is that we're living, in fact, in a new age of gendered attacks, where the digital revolution has enabled armies of keyboard warriors to create new victims, from schoolgirls to presidential candidates. It's a new and different battle for women and girls, and it's a battle where the rules are largely non-existent and the social norms haven't evolved at all. The new technology has developed, but the social disciplines that check against bad behaviour hasn't. Online bullying is a bit like road rage. It's enabled in part by the disconnect from personal interaction. And I explain it in this way. When we bump into each other in the street, thousands of years of socialisation teaches us to acknowledge our fellow human being, perhaps apologise or smile and move on. But in a car, we're encased in our metal shell and there's no connection to the person who we have aggrieved or been aggrieved by. We are more free to become abusive and aggressive, and that's what we see at times on our roads. It's the same with online behaviour. We haven't developed the social tools to keep abusive and aggressive behaviour in check. And now this absence is bringing about a shift in how women are regarded right around the world. But online bullying is just one part of the gender inequality that women and girls face from cradle to grave. And a lifetime discrimination has a compounding effect on women. And of course it starts early in childhood. It means that we get less pocket money as girls and less attention in the classroom. Girls are bombarded with gender stereotypes driven by the media and community expectations. Emphasis on girls' appearance limit their confidence in their own abilities and set the tone for their adolescence. And it manifests in harmful ways for girls. They drop out of sport, and they have higher rates of anxiety and depression. At university, women graduate in greater numbers than men, yet more women secure lower graduate salaries and enter lower paid professions when they finish. In the workforce, the hard truth of the pay disparity and the lack of women in leadership positions is well understood here in Australia. In fact, I had a look at the ASX 200 companies, and there are more chairmanships and CEOs of those companies named Peter than there are women. In Australia today, the gender pay gap is at 17%, and it's getting worse. When women take career breaks for parenting, they lose promotional opportunities and face alarming levels of discrimination. In fact, one in two working women report experiencing discrimination during pregnancy, parental leave, or a return to work. And then, of course, in retirement, women must make do with just over half the superannuation savings of men. And again, these numbers are actually, here in Australia, getting worse. Now, I have an 11-year-old daughter and a 12-year-old son, and it pains me to think that she will face a lifetime of discrimination simply because she was born a girl. But most of all, it pains me to think that she is far more likely to experience violence in her lifetime in the one place she should be at her safest, and that is in her own home, and that this violence is likely to come at the hands of someone who was supposed to care for her the most. Now, by now, you might have the impression that I'm a bit of a glass half-empty kind of person on the topic of how women and girls are faring, and you're right. I do think and I do know that things have gotten worse. The UN's Gender Index has dropped Australia's rating as compared to other countries around the world from 24 to 36. But I don't feel pessimistic about the future because I know that there are things that we can do about this. From large structural shifts that can be brought about by progressive governments with a mandate from the people for a change, to the cultural shift that comes from changing the story. First and foremost, we need to equally highlight the three key arguments for gender equality. In the past, ending discrimination and gender inequality has largely been seen through the lens of what is considered fair and just. It's a powerful lens, no doubt, and has helped us make significant advances for women. But arguing on these terms alone has not been enough to improve outcomes for the majority of women globally. Globally, women participate in the workforce on an unequal basis with men. In Victoria, the workforce participation rate for women is at 58% as compared to 71% for men. The gender pay gap persists and gets worse. Globally, women earn 60 to 75% of men's wages. In Victoria here, women in full-time work earn around $15,000 less than men every year. And this is a real bugbear of mine. Women devote around 1 to 3 hours more a day to housework than men. I tell my husband that he's the house husband at home and he hates hearing that statistic because he's convinced it's not true. In fact, women, Australian women, spend almost twice as much time on unpaid work as men do. Now, fighting for gender equality on the grounds of fairness has arguably failed to achieve very much. The other powerful argument for gender equality is, of course, the economic case. Countless studies show it just makes sense, good economic sense, to take the brake off 50% of the world's population. And globally, this case is overwhelming. Economic empowerment of women and girls drives down poverty and spurs sustainable economic growth. We know, thanks to UN Women, that increasing the participation of women in the labour force leads to faster economic growth. And when women's financial situation improves and they increase the share of the household income they control, it changes how much is spent on things that benefit the children the most. In other words, when women do well, children do well. And when it comes to business and economic performance, the arguments for gender equality are also powerful. An analysis of Australian Exchange 500 companies found that companies with female representation on their boards outperformed others by 8.7% over 5 years. Similarly, a recent study by the Peterson Institute looked at 22,000 companies around the world, and it found with just 30% of women in leadership roles, those companies achieved 15% greater profitability than companies that had no women on their boards. There is growing evidence, and in fact, no matter where you look, there is growing evidence that greater gender diversity delivers some of the highest performing companies around the world. The evidence shows that it takes a critical mass of women on a board to bring about significant change to performance and create the benefits of improved corporate governance. Here in Australia, the Grattan Institute calculated that just a 6% rise in the participation of women in the workforce would increase the size of the Australian economy by about $25 billion every year. So when Joe Hockey stood in, I assume, forums much like this and talked about that fact and called on Australia to improve participation for women, what he didn't do is actually outline the pathways to actually achieve that. So I'm getting a bit sick and tired of politicians talking about how we need to change that statistic. I need to see clear pathways to actually improve outcomes for women and girls. Finally, I would hope that the most compelling case for gender equality, the horrendous rate of violence against women around the world, would be something that community leaders and world leaders can no longer ignore. The sad truth is that no culture and no country anywhere in the world can say that they provide a safe place for women and girls. Rosie Batty in our country shone a very, very bright light on what we have ignored for generations when she spoke up about the murder of her son. The sad truth is that we have failed so many children and so many women for such a very long time. But in talking about gendered violence in the way that we are, I'm optimistic that we are all determined not to fail their memories as well. I want to turn on to the impact that the United Nations has had on advancing gender equality. And our nation, isolated as it is, tends not to look overseas to learn from our neighbours and friends. Moreover, our national pride, and there's a great deal to be proud of, can blind us to our own challenges and to our own blind spots. There is strength in our "she'll be right, mate" attitude as well, as an inherent weakness. And this is where the UN becomes critically important. It challenges us and it sets a standard that would otherwise not be there. Over the decades, the UN has made great progress towards improving and advancing the position of women and girls. The Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, adopted by the UN General Assembly in 1979, was the culmination of more than three decades' worth of work by the UN Commission on the Status of Women. It's been just over two decades since the fourth UN World Conference on Women produced its visionary agenda for the empowerment of women. The Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action, adopted in 1995, represented a major step forward for women's equality. Participating governments of the Declaration committed to ensuring women's equal access to economic resources, land, credit, science and technology, vocational training, information, communication and markets as a means to further the advancement and empowerment of women and girls. But I want to bring this a little bit closer to home and talk about what's happening here in Victoria. Despite our reputation and what we tell ourselves as being a progressive state in Australia, the truth is that we have actually never had a gender equality strategy. In fact, it took my office three goes to convince me that we didn't have, here in Victoria, a gender equality strategy. I imagined it was somewhere gathering dust in some department in the bowels of the ship. Now, you might wonder, what difference can one document make? But the point of an underlying strategy is to ensure that every part of the government is signed up to ensuring that levelling the playing field for women and girls is factored into everything that they do. Just think for a moment what we could achieve when ending gender inequality is embedded into all decisions about allocating resources and setting policy. And keep in mind that in Victoria, as in other states around Australia, the Victorian government is the biggest business in town by a significant margin. We have a $60 billion budget every year. We have enormous capacity as a consequence of that. Sorry, a bit of a head cold. Now, Victoria's first gender equality strategy will be released later this year, and I have no doubt it will help us overcome the barriers faced by Victorian women across all aspects of their lives. But like you, I don't want to see just another glossy brochure highlighting how unfair gender inequality is. I want all the arguments to be there, along with clear and agreed targets and timeframes. Because I understand that to deliver on gender equality is going to take time beyond election cycles and budget cycles. And a good gender equality strategy is going to have to hold people like me to account. At a state government level, we've experienced this approach firsthand with the Premier's decision to ensure that 50% of all appointments to paid government boards and to our courts must be women. And as a consequence, we've reached that target, in fact exceeded it, by 52%. And as a consequence, we've increased the total number of female representation on paid government boards from 39% to 43%. Now, we're following the lead of other countries around the world and from the UN because we are determined to walk the talk of gender equality. And that's why we will, again, in an Australian first, participate in the UN 16 Days of Community Activism to end violence against women and girls later this year. Our Victoria Against Violence campaign will once again engage and educate the wider community about family violence and gender inequality. And importantly, it will actively promote gender equity in our policy and field of work to support the economic empowerment of all women and girls. Earlier this year, I tried to explain to my daughter that the UN had estimated that it will take another 117 years to reach global gender parity at the current rate of reform. That means neither she nor I will be alive to see it. But I told her that here in Victoria, we don't want to wait that long, and that's why we're doing all the work that we are. And I told her about what the new Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, said when asked why gender parity was important to him, following his decision to appoint the same number of women and men to his cabinet. And he simply shrugged, as we know, his shoulders, and he said, because it's 2015. Hearing this, I'm optimistic. But I'm particularly optimistic when I talk to young kids like my daughter and others of her generation about what we're trying to achieve. Because young kids don't see gender. And just like they don't see race and they don't see religion, we're the ones who impose these limits on a girl's ability to reach their potential. And we're the ones who for generations have turned a blind eye to the most terrible consequence of attitudes towards women and gender inequality in our society, which is, of course, violence against women and girls. We can change this story. We are determined to change this story. And if we don't change, I feel certain that the next generation will. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. Before we break for lunch, there's one thing that I want to do that's absolutely important, and that is that I want to publicly acknowledge the extraordinary work of my brilliant colleague, Sophie Arnold.
Thanks for listening to this special podcast from Broad on Joy 94.9 at the National Forum on the Economic Empowerment of Women and Girls, held at the Novotel in Collins Street, Melbourne. It ran from the 5th to the 6th of September 2016. And thanks to the United Nations Association of Australia and Sophie Arnold.
Thank you. You've been listening to a broadcast on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.